Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. Man, it doesn't show signs.
You know, I miss Kevin. We never see each other in person, but I do see his face on my computer screen every Tuesday, every week, for 70 weeks. Oh my. Welcome to Seaside Pod Review, episode 70, and I think we're falling out of love. So with Kev's deft hand and my brutish nature, we're going to force you to admire our giving nature. Hey, look, it's Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable, Seaside Pod Review. Seaside Pod Review.
Pretty much sums it up, does it not?
Seaside Pod Review.
Hey, Kevin Brown.
Hey, Randy Woods.
For the love that is of everything that is fucking holy and whatnot, and whatever Jesus references you'd like to make, right? We got fucking snow.
Oh, fuck.
So they said 30 to 40 centimeters. And I don't know what that is in inches, but in my estimation, my hoser estimation, it's a fuck ton.
It's a lot of fucking snow.
That's a lot of fucking snow. A fuck ton is considerably more than a ton.
That's an imperial fuck ton, not a metric fuck ton. So slightly more.
It's even, well, yeah, yes. Yeah, it's imperial. Exactly. That's a lot of fucking snow. So just to explain it to you, I now have on my street, I have maybe 4 foot high ridges of snow. And what they do is, so, you know, you park your car on the street and then you they come by with a plow and they, you know, your car's there, but they don't care. And so then they put this 4 to 5 foot snow ridge in front of and beside your car. So then you got to shovel that out. And okay, that's fine, whatever. It's got to be done. So you shovel it out and then they come by and do it again.
Well, and the nice thing about it is, I mean, you know, as you know, Randy, that snow, it, you know, when they come through and they plow it, it just stays nice and fluffy. So it's really easy to move. It doesn't solidify into a big fucking hoth like ice wall at all, right? You know?
No, it doesn't do that at all. And I'm quite lucky because I'm on a bus route.
Yeah.
So my streets get, they're a priority, not maybe not one, but priority two street.
Yeah, probably priority two, yeah.
Yeah, so they get done right quick smart, but a cul-de-sac like yourselves, although you told me just earlier that yours did, you get plowed, which I'm very surprised. But basically the city has been paralyzed and, but you know, we're coming out of it now. So it was only 30 below this morning. 37 actually with the wind.
Yeah, me a bagatelle, you know, in these parts. But I've got to tell, so I've got a little story for you though about snow and about all those types of things. So
I went to get,
as you may be able to tell, like I don't know if you can see on the camera there, I got my ears lowered today and my hair cut. Mm-hmm. So I got back from my haircut about 2:30 and I'm sort of pulling towards my house and I can see some prick is fucking parked, I think. It looks like they're right in front of my fucking driveway. So I'm like, well, what the... And so sometimes when it's like this, people, what they'll do is they'll park up right on our cul-de-sac and they'll take their dogs for a walk, like through the forestry farm, right? Which is right next to our place. So I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, someone's in front of my house. So as I get closer, I can see my youngest daughter, Emma, and her best friend, Callie, and their friend, oh my Lord, his name's gone.
Joe. It's Joe. Very popular name for
I don't know why that is. His name is just literally... Anyways, so they're there, and he's decided, and he's driving like this little fucking, you know, front-wheel drive here, sport, or something, like some little small car, and has decided to try and drive out after he's dropped Emma off and drive out through a snowbank, which, of course, ended up with him being very, very stuck. So I pull up and get into the garage and I'm like, what the fuck? Why did you try and drive through a snowbank? And he goes, I don't know. I'm like, oh, man, all right. So we start pushing and digging and pushing and digging. And I try and train, because obviously this kid's never had to rock himself out of snow before. And for those of you who've never done it, all you got to do is put it in drive, rock yourself gently forward. When the momentum brings you back, put it in reverse and keep doing that until you can get yourself out. And it usually works, you know, more or less. So we're doing all this, and I'm trying to get in there, and it's fucking stuck, man. Like, I'm thinking this guy's bottomed out, like he's sitting on top of the snow. This is going to be a bit of a pain in the ass. So we get the ice picky things out, and we put some, you know, floor mats underneath the tires to try and get it out. And so he's in the car, and there's four of us now at this point going to push this vehicle. And I say, like, I'll put it in neutral. So he kind of nods at me, and we push, and it's just not moving. So again, a bit more digging. I get in and I try rocking it. No, I'm just not getting enough momentum back and forth. So I put it in neutral and say, okay, let's all five of us just try giving it a good push. And we get it out, I would say almost immediately. So what I suspect, Randy, is that this young man doesn't know that his car has a neutral gear and didn't put it in the neutral gear. So all the time we were pushing it, I'm pretty sure we were fucking pushing against the motor. Which wasn't very helpful and not a whole lot of fun.
So he put it in park, is what you're thinking?
He must have put it in park, yeah. Which,
either
you know,
either that or he put it neutral, then put his foot on the brake. And then,
either way, not massively helpful. But it was pretty funny. I mean, you know, in Canada, you're used to that. Everyone's been stuck at some point. Even if you're a good driver, you get stuck in snow and you just get people out. That's just what you do, right?
Yeah, it's the Canadian way, eh?
It is. It's the Canadian way. It's what we do here. When the heavens open.
You know what? If there's anything you can count on, it's a fucking Canadian fucking pushing you out of the fucking snow. And if you're not from here, then they'll make lots of jokes. They like, we like to do that. We like doing that. Oh, it's pretty cold. I bet you never seen this much snow before, eh? We like to say things like that. And another thing we like to do too is if you move here, especially if you move to like a place like Saskatoon, we say, why the fuck did you move here? Yeah. You know, and inevitably it's for love. Like, or Mr. Sex. Brown, for instance. Mr. Brown, you moved for sex and love. I would like to hope there's both there, Kev.
Certainly a lot more of one than the other when I first moved.
Right. Well, and we're talking about your wife, not your right hand, Kev.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I love my wife. I moved a continent and an ocean. Or an ocean and a half a continent to be with her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've stayed here 25 years. I don't know why she puts up with me. Can't imagine what she's doing with me. But, you know, there you go.
One can only assume she'll be shipping you back to fucking Wigan Stat.
She can't. I'm a citizen now, man. Fuck you. I got a passport.
The amount of fucking time you spend fucking podcasting? Have you done what I suggested yet? You and Mrs. Brown start your own podcast. It can be about your fucking podcasts. It could be about anything. Then you guys get a little quality time, Kev. A little quality time.
So what you're suggesting is that I make Karen listen to this podcast and then do a podcast reviewing this podcast.
Is that what
you want me to do?
No, just, you know, all the podcasts you're on?
Mm-hmm.
Because you guest on a million podcasts. You guys start a podcast talking about all the various podcasts. And you can even talk about the podcasts that you listen to. And you know what it'd be called? It'd be called Kevin and Karen's fucking deadly podcast fucking show.
Don't need the fuckings in there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Of course you do.
Okay. That's part of the name, is it? All right.
That's part of the name. See how good I am at naming shit? I'm just like, and it's just like this. It's just off the, you know?
You're an enigma wrapped in a, I don't know, wet fucking towel or something.
A piece of bacon. Okay. So I digress. You and lovely Mrs. Brown. I don't know if that would work. That's maybe not the best idea I've ever had, Kev. But hey, man, I'm spitting them out at least. I'm spitting them out.
I don't think we should cross the streams.
Are you messing with independent Kevin?
It's my time to be on my own, Randy. Is someone get to do my own thing? You know, some guys go fishing, some guys go golfing. I come down here on our podcast. Call me sad, call me lonely, call me attention seeking. I don't fucking know.
Okay, sad and lonely. Are we gonna start this fucking podcast or what the fuck?
Dude, we've been podcasting like motherfuckers here for, you know, I'm podcasting my face off over here.
it's been brought to my attention that it takes us like fucking 40 minutes before we spin the fucking wheel. The fuck's going on? Like, we should tighten it up, Kev. Listen, if you're in my band, you know what I'd tell you? I'd say, fucking tighten it up, Brown. And you know what? If you want to play my band, you'd fucking tighten it up, buddy.
Yeah, but are you saying that I would have to cut my 22-minute drum solo down to, you know, 18 or 19?
Yes. No, I'm saying we'd fucking cut that fucking drum solo. Hey, Kev, what do you call a guy that hangs around with musicians?
A drummer. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it's good. Hey, you like that one, hey?
Yeah.
Does it hurt your feeling?
Yeah, real funny fucking guy over there. Yeah, real fucking funny guy.
Oh, yeah. You're fucking
sick. I hope you like soup because it's hard to chew steak with no fucking teeth.
There you go. I'm not sure what accent that was.
But... I don't know either. It was New York via Scunthorpe. So right. There you go. Odd, a very odd circuitous route, almost as odd as Saskatoon via Wigan. But here, before we do anything else, there's a little bit of housekeeping we've got to do.
Yes, sir.
That I want to, because we didn't do it last season. Because we're finishing up season 7 here, Andy. This is episode 70.
I don't believe it.
I'm fucking telling you the truth. Would I lie to you? So we got to pick which episode next season is going to be our B-side pod review. So how many times should I click this generate here button here? How many times do you want me to click it?
I want you to hit that generate button 3 times.
Okay. 1, 2, 3. So episode 5 of season 8 of the Seaside Pod Review will be the B-side pod review. What do you think of that?
I think that's marvelous.
So, Mr. Woods, if that is in fact your real name.
Not.
Oh. Well, what? What is your real name?
I'm not fucking telling you now. Not at this fucking point.
Well, fair enough. Oh, I shall remain in the dark.
It took you this long to ask, so.
Last week, we covered, I'd say a fairly polarizing song, The Invisible Man from The Miracle.
Yes.
We weren't enamored of it, didn't really particularly like it.
No.
To be honest, if I had never listened to it again, I won't really lose the whole bunch of sleep about that.
Yeah.
But we put the poll out on Twitter.
We did.
As we always do. And I thought that it would come back overwhelmingly negative. I guess 35-65. Yep. And you I always accuse you of taking the coward's way out. You called it 50-50. What were the poll results this week?
Well, Kevin, they were 48.2 to 51.8, biting the dust. So I'd say that's got to be me for the win, Kev.
Cheap for the win again, you fucking... And you know what?
If my math's correct.
Your math is correct, and it's this getting quite annoying because Corey Morissette, my friend Corey Morissette and co-host on the Ultimate Catalog Clash, was giving me no end of the fucking gears the other day about being absolutely shit at being... trying to figure out what the, what the zeitgeist is going to say.
Yeah, well, you know what? I just never know, so... And you're the expert here.
Ah, you're getting better, man.
So in a way... Corey's right to ride you.
Nah,
I've still never met Corey Morissette, but we talk about him a lot.
Well, he's been on the show, Randy. I mean, you've met him virtually.
No, I know, but I haven't met him in person.
I've only met him once. We'll have to take a trip down to Weyburn, and do a fucking crisscross Venn diagram podcast mashup extraordinaire.
We could do that.
All right. Let's get into some social media because you're the one who's complaining about it being too fucking long. So let's get into it. Andy Hall Radio says, "Too bad invisibility doesn't also render pointless dreck like this inaudible." Guess that's sold separately. Dust, bottom 3 song in the Queen catalog. It's like, oof, that's some stinky cheese he's going with there. I don't know, man. I don't know if it's bottom 3 for me, but yeah.
I quite like that analogy too. That's really well said.
I do like the word dreck. Can I pod with Madness? Which you may, obviously you've never heard of it, but I bet you can guess which band they cover on that podcast.
Can I play with Madness?
Like Madness, the band? Madness?
No.
then I don't know. No.
Iron Maiden. So it's Can I Play With Madness? It's a play on, right? So.
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I didn't know. Is that an album title or is that a song title by them?
Song title. You don't know that
okay. one? No, I quit listening to them after, I don't know.
Powerslave?
Yeah, there you go.
But Powerslave, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, you missed some good stuff, my friend. Anyway, Can I Pub With Madness says, quite why Queen decided to use a backing track from the Yamaha PSS-680 on an actual record that they'd release is something I'd like to hear more about. And yeah, I mean, it's a fair fucking criticism.
A Jim C. at Curtis Sparkles. This is one of Queen's greatest tracks. Champion.
And we know he's being sarcastic because we know that Jim fucking hates everything in the 80s, or more or less.
Yes, yes. I would say that that is from what I know. and Chrissy at the Waters of Love. Champion. Not an easy champ, but nostalgia drives this choice. It's naff, it's cheesy, it's cheap, nasty, addictive. Hell, I want Queen in my bedroom and then some. I saw this lorry in front of my bus while listening to an episode. I couldn't stop laughing. And it appears to say
shit.
Shit. Looks like it to me. I wonder what they're carrying.
Well, I'd commented that, you know, the van driver's probably saying, hey, where am I taking this shitload of Invisible Man 12-inch singles? Dewsbury? Yeah, I guess that's Gans. Nice. Steve May at Steve UK says, champion just for the bass alone. And Lisa Malloy says, I'm not overly impressed with the Cardinals' assertion that people who like the Invisible Man don't listen to a variety of music. Rubbish. I love this song on so many levels. The beat, Freddie's growly voice, Brian's guitar solo, the brilliant video, the shout-outs, champion. So there you go, Randy. That's you fucking told.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry about that, Lisa. I love you all together and separately.
Lynn Davidson. I don't know if it's technically a good song. And furthermore, I don't care. It makes me and plenty of other people with exquisite taste in music happy. So there. And look, we didn't argue that point, and I am very glad that it brings so many people joy. I just think that, you know, once the lobotomy wears off, maybe you'll come back to your senses, you know?
once
Randy got in trouble last week, I'm doubling down this week.
Yeah, you really are. Once you come down off of whatever it is you took, then we can all agree it's a piece of shit song. No, I'm just kidding. I'm such a dick. And I, you know what? The thing is, too, is I don't really mean to be. So if it comes out, I apologize. Paul Moody at the Sword of Reason says, it's fucking toilet. I don't know. I think I'm really not. I don't know what you're getting at, Paul. Try to be a little more precise. Oh, my God. Okay. Alice's dad, Barry John Williams. This one's easy. It's a champion. I may end up being in the minority, but that won't change my mind. And when it's your 8-year-old daughter's, as surprise to no one, Alice is her favorite, it gives me more reason to champion. So Alice Wynn Williams, champion times 2. Well, that's very nice.
Yeah, it's dirty pool, though. I mean, invoking your lovely daughter and making us sort of, we can't come back at that, can we?
It is. It's kind of like, you know, just pulling at your heartstrings sort of unnecessarily, Barry. You know,
I should say,
are both wiping our brows and our tears, and we're just thinking about your lovely daughter,
who is also a very talented young lady, by the way. I just use the word dirty pool, which I don't think is actually a term that we used to use in England. I've kind of picked it up over on this side of the pond. It just means like, when you're playing snooker or pool, it means just, you know, snookering people, or just kind of generally playing shitty, cheap, you know, shots where instead of going for it. So, you know,
yeah.
Or as I like to think of it, playing the game well. Rob Patton says it's a kid's song. I loved it as a kid. Now it offers me very little and I never listen to it out of choice. Also, is the bass playing even real? I always assumed it was synth bass. I used to be blown away by the solo, but later I realized it's mainly a load of tapping dust. Now, I got nothing against tapping. I didn't mind the solo, but I'm not too sure on the bass. I think it's real. But you know, it's a miracle, so it fucking could be a synth. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, it could have been programmed, in all fairness. Yeah. I don't remember listening close enough to really making my own decisions, but
I don't know if you actually noticed this, Randy, but I did a 6,617-inch remix of The Invisible Man. just because someone was, and we will get to the comment later on that it's they just love the bass line. So I thought I'd just do, you know, an 8-hour remix of The Invisible Man, and this is roughly, I'm not going to play all of it because obviously fuck that, but here you go. So just as that for 8 hours, I thought that would be quite funny to put that online and just, just if anyone wants to torture anyone with it, they can just leave that on, turn it up full volume and just leave the fucking house if your neighbors are pissing you off.
Oh my God.
But the bass, do you think synth bass or real bass there?
It does sound synthy,
doesn't it? Yeah.
It's hard to tell. It could be both too. It could be both.
Yeah. Blend.
Yeah. But it does sound synthy. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. Aaron Mullen says it's 80s Queen, it's from The Miracle, it rips off other songs, and yet I love the cheesy wee bugger. We all know it's a shit Roger Taylor tune, but the bass beat, repetition, band callouts, Brian May solo, and the video carry it through. Clear, Camembert champ.
And possibly a new commenter, Wes. Solidarity with Roger Taylor this Sunday afternoon, and he's got The Invisible Man on a 12-inch. And it looks like he's not afraid to spin it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take that as an upvote. Thanks, Wes. And Doug Kern says, if you think The Invisible Man has an overly long ending, check out Roger's solo track, Absolutely Anything, which fades out for 35 seconds. It's a sweet, very listable 5-minute, 4-second song, but it could have easily ended at 4 minutes and 4. There you go. I am a fan of getting in, getting out. So,
yes, you are.
You know what, Doug? I'm not going to listen to absolutely anything.
Well, we will at some point because we, you know, wouldn't it be funny if episode five next season?
It would be funny, wouldn't it? And I'd be getting mine.
Queen Rocks Australia says this one has a certain cheesy charm to it, but not enough substance to be a champ. The bridge is cool and the guitar solo is interesting. More interesting is that this is Roger's second reference to The Invisible Man in a Queen song after telling us he couldn't see in a human body. Which I don't remember the lyrics to that song. I don't remember that song actually very well. Mob Raha Rules or Rob Maha Rules or Eponymist says, I have a half-baked theory that H.G. Wells' Invisible Man is actually a right-wing anti-immigration parable where invisible is a euphemism for black or dark-skinned. Any comments that Wells has for me in this area? If true, it would still be less offensive than this song. Fuck off, dust.
Midwife Nikki says, I, just, like it.
I just want to translate quickly for our UK listeners that I, full stop, just, full stop, like, full stop, it, full stop. Because we don't say period in the UK, Randy.
You're not in the fucking UK, Kevin.
That's true. I know. I'm just translating, Randy, just in case people were confused.
Oh, you're insufferable.
I do try.
It's fun. It's fun and bouncy, and the video is fun. And what's not to like? Haven't heard the episode yet, so you might change my mind. And, you know, I'm assuming she hasn't commented, so probably didn't change her mind.
I don't know, because there's a comment. Let me...
And we just did Mob, so Mob. Also, I'll do Brad.
Yeah, Paul Bradbury, Paul. Yeah.
And Paul Bradbury, it says, the production lets it down, but the song is fun. Champion, just.
Alex Small says, quite simply, the second worst Queen song in the catalog, and the video is embarrassment 80s guff, just like the song and most of the album. Dust, in case it wasn't obvious. It was very obvious, Alex.
Darren Helliwell says, like the guitar solo, the song is not as bad as some people say, but I would still vote dust. And PJ at New Mercury says, I'm going to collect my thoughts before passing judgment. But in the meantime, don't mind me. I'm just here to read the comments. So, yeah, there you go.
Richard Hearn says, the beat is catchy, but then so is syphilis, apparently. My kids, when younger, used to like it, but they're not always the best judge. Downvoting it is like slagging off row, row, row your boat while at a children's party. I'm going to be here on this visible fence. So yeah, it's
I'm not sure what he's done there. I don't know either. I think he might be upvoting it, and at the same time calling us out as though we were slagging a children's song,
which we probably were, because it isn't. It's little more than a nursery rhyme.
It is.
Steve Ursel says it's a silly and enjoyable song. I don't love it, but I do like it, and I'm bemused by the excessive hammering it seems to get. It's way better than A Fair Chunk of Hot Space, The Miracle, and A Kind of Magic. Borderline, but voting champion because it's been made an underdog. So there we go. With our pile on might have pushed more people, you know, further to the further to the right.
Just can imagine the what would happen if we had upvoted it. Paul Wobblyoff voted Dust only just. I do like the song, but just Dust against the overall Queen catalog. Good fun video too. The song reminds me of Cowboys and Indians by The Cross too. Has anyone else thought this? And I have not, because I don't know that song.
So The Cross is Roger Taylor's band that he formed. I'm just going to play a wee teeny teensy bit of this. I definitely know the song. I just can't bloody remember it.
They're such a natural born couple. They settled down right here in the USA. Dream home for two in the USA.
See, you were saying about The Invisible Man that it was missing horns. And this song has horns, right? So
there's some horns there, yeah.
Some horns there.
Too quick to say if they're real or fake, but they're trying.
My friend Leighton Brown, Top Leighton, says one of the better moments on The Miracle, in brackets, which I appreciate, is like being crowned the world's tallest dwarf. Not as high as its highest highs, but nowhere near as low as its lows. Baffling production choices abound, as they do throughout the album. Still love it, though. So there's an upvote from Leighton.
There we go. Yeah, surprising. Michael Evans, he says, it's an okay song, but I expect more than okay from Queen. So it's Dust from me. And our pal Ian Winnick says, Chiswick Fresh Horses, we ride at once to rebellious Wigan, where it is my sworn intent to approach the city walls, bear my broad buttocks and shout, I champion the invisible man. Oh my goodness. Well, that's you've painted a picture, Ian.
Well,
and I'm sure Kev would like to spank your bare broad buttocks.
Broad they may be, and bare I hope never to see. You know, that's a little bit out of Blackadder, the first series of Blackadder, which is the one that fewer people know about, which stars the inimitable Brian Blessed. Flash Gordon fame. Also, there's a bit of a Queen connection there.
Mm. I like Queen connections.
Oh, well, who wants to live forever?
Fit Light Photography, Ruddy Rutherford. I'm glad the wheel spun this one finally, just so we could get it behind us. I'd rather drink piss through a shitty cloth than listen to this ever again. Dust, if you didn't already guess.
So yeah, everybody's on a fan.
Pretty harsh criticism. And, you know, but you know what? I gotta say, at least he's straining the piss.
And pash. In Scotland, it's not piss, it's pash.
I know, but I wasn't gonna try to say it and sound like I'm trying to.
I'd rather drink pash through a shitty cloth than listen to this ever again. Dreadful. I'm gonna take that out. Or I might leave it in. No. We'll see.
Fucking leave it in.
And I did like Alice's dad. Pity we didn't get body language for episode 69. A very good point. David A. Wilson said, if this song was commissioned for a movie, they'd just about get away with it. But Roger seems to have inexplicably just written a song just in case someone would commission him to write a theme tune. I hate, in order, the whispering, lyrics, bass, synths, the infinite fucking ending. I mean, that's a takedown. It's a takedown.
E.M. Ling, it should never have made the airwaves. And stands as the single worst thing Queen ever recorded. Kev, I don't think he likes it. And Dominic Pierce says, terrible song. Only redeeming feature is the guitar solo. Just looked through my collection and found that I bought 5 different versions of the single. and it still only reached number 12 in the UK charts. Great marketing, though. Especially the 7 and 12-inch clear vinyls. Dust. So for a guy who hates a song, he gave enough of his money to Queen.
Oh, I'm pretty sure that I had the 7 and 12 inch clear vinyl. I'm pretty sure I had the CD single as well. I'm pretty sure. So. They get you with the merch, though. They get you with the fucking clear vinyl, the colored vinyls. They just, you know.
I mean, who doesn't want to be able to look through their records, right?
Why would they ever black? They should all be see-through. It's a waste of fucking time coloring them in. Scott Van Diver says, no doubt dust. They may have copied I Want a New Drug, but my Subaru ripped off the inane beeping at 339 and 346 for the driver assist tech. I thought I was driving off the damn road. Brian Crozier says, in the tsunami of shite on that album, this is surprisingly not the worst offender, but it needs poop scooped into a bag and fired into a council dustbin pronto. See, there's vehemence here, you know, in the downvoting.
Yeah. Ross Phillips. I know it's totally cheesy and a crap synth 80s pop song, but the sound and the video are so nostalgic for me since I graduated high school the same year this came out. So yeah, we got another one in the nostalgia camp. And yeah. Prime Jive Funster says, Dust, what's the difference between this song and a bucket of shit? And the answer, of course, is the bucket. And he goes on to say, on the positive, I say I really love Brian's solo and Freddie sounds like he's having fun. They supposedly recorded 30 tracks from the album and this made the cut? Unbelievable. So yeah, it's true. Imagine how shitty the other songs were that didn't make it if this one rose to the occasion.
I think it's just Roger lobbying very, very hard. You know, maybe he went and locked himself in a closet again until they put the Invisible Man on it. You know, yeah. We don't know. Harry Hussey says, I don't mind the song. That bass line is definitely the best part, though, but it still does for me. And then that Eurythmics song is a classic, though. Thanks for reminding me about that. And that was the song that we posted. But again, everything's escaping my brain tonight, Randy. Which song did we say? It sounded like...
Love
is a Stranger.
Love is a Stranger, yeah.
Yeah.
I was just going to add to that... You know, I don't mind the song. You know, just imagine you're a chef.
Yeah.
And your customer, you say, well, you know, what do you think? Well, I didn't mind it. Yeah. You know, that's never what you're striving for, right? No. You know, I wasn't repulsed completely by the dish you served, but it could have been fucking better.
Very, very, very British and Irish kind of way of complimenting them, the two, without, you know, backhanded compliment. It'd be great to, like, you know, on your next CD, Randy, you know, and sometimes they'll have, like, on the packaging, they'll have, like, you know, such and such somebody says this, and such and such, you know, Harry Hussey says, I didn't mind it.
Yeah.
Kev Brown said, yeah, it's okay. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's the other old, joke, which I'm not sure if I've told on here or not, but when you're a musician and you see other musicians playing and they get off stage, what you say to them is you say, oh man, I really like what you were trying to do up there. And you just kind of leave it at that. Cause they'll say, thank you. And then after a while they'll go, what? Fucking asshole.
Well, the other one too, you can do is, well, I thought it was good.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. Ah. Daniel Flett says, brilliant guitars on this, but cannot save it from the bin of dust. And Blair, 98 says, I don't think it's as bad as the boys from At Lapod say it is, but it is dusty than a dusty thing. Very much of its time, and it wasn't a great time for music. It would have been interesting to hear a live version and see if it was better, a la Staying Power. Yeah, I mean, songs do get elevated live, but I just don't know about this one, Randy. Paul Rowley says, absolute garbage. One of the worst songs they ever recorded. I cannot think of any positives, I'm afraid. Dust of the highest order.
Tom Bojay says, overly long with a stupid ass name call out. Sorry, but the video influences shouldn't sway whether you like the song or not. My grading system is this. Would I share this with a non-Queen fan? Absolutely not. Dust. Tom's got no fucking time for this fucking shit.
No, and I mean, on that criteria, I'm fucking 100% in Tom's camp, and I would be very surprised if even the, you know, because there's some people who are championing it on nostalgia. I don't think any of them are going to say, hey, this band I love, Queen, you should listen to this fucking song, and then you'll definitely love them, you know?
Yeah. There's this hot new track I'm checking out. It's called The Invisible Man. Come on. Yeah.
As they walk away pelting you with their own shit.
Fucking hell. Okay.
My good pal, Sean McGuinness, he was just on my Tom Petty podcast with his brother, Todd, very recently, and that'll be going out in 3 or 4 weeks. Quick plug there, Randy. He says, my donut stalled on this one. I thought I was listening to a Dr. Demento show. As far as the Weird Al's originals go, are we sure this isn't Al Yankovic? This would fit right in with Dare to be Stupid. For me, this is too campy and spoopy to be taken seriously. Out of the Queen context, this is a good song. Just leave those kinds of songs to the artists that do those kinds of songs. That being said, this song could easily be played at any of the various nerd conventions I go to.
I hate Winnipeg.
So, you know, he's got some Star Wars nerdery, I think, on his resume, Randy.
Nice.
And a first comment, I'm pretty sure, from my pal, my actual real in-person pal, who I see probably once a month, usually at our pub quizzes, Aaron Brown. I don't know if Aaron listens to every episode. If you do, Aaron, let me know by DM maybe. But he says, oof, it's a tough song to listen to. Couldn't really agree more.
Steve Jonkman says, I don't think it deserves to be championed, but I also don't think it's complete trash either. For the most part, the drums do sound awful, but in the bridge, the drums are acoustic and the bass drum sounds huge. Of course, it goes back to that heavily processed sound, but at least the song has some contrast. The song itself is silly and ridiculous, but I like it. I also don't get too hung up on comparing the song to Huey, Ghostbusters, or the Eurythmics. I still choose the song over any of those because it's Queen and I like what I like. And you know what, Steve? Like what you like, man. It's all, you know, G with the big Kev B.
Know what you like and like what you know. It's getting better in your wardrobe.
It's 1 o'clock and time for lunch. Bum-de-dum-de-dum. When the sun beats down and I lie on the bench, I can always hear them talk. There's always
been Ethel. And Paul Roberts says, great pod, as usual. Wow. Thanks, Paul.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Think you both summed this up. Awful. Queen went from setting trends in the 70s to chasing them in the 80s. As you said, sounds like Ghostbusters, but with a sample of Michael Jackson's Got to Be Starting Something off Thriller. Hooer dust. Thanks so much, Paul. Flattery will get you everywhere. And right now, I'm just trying to get Kev's head to swell enough that he can get his headphones back on. And he's going to read you what Jeremy says.
Well, Jeremy Walpole says, I'm going to let my flag unfurl and say major dusty turd with 5 flag emojis and 1 turd emoji. Mainly flag, a little bit of turd. Our good pal Alan Dudney says, I've always thought of it as Queen's One for the Kids, and I guess it is a fun song. I kind of accepted it for a short while back then, but like most of the Miracle, I wouldn't miss it if I never heard it again. Hopefully this week's show will end with one of either of you's songs, maybe Pharmacist on a Harley or Never Said, if you take requests. So, you know, Al, you just listen through the end of the episode and maybe we'll have a little treat for you and for everyone else. Richard Stott says, every week I try and be concise with my comments and every week I end up writing a fucking essay. So this week, here goes, dust, goodbye. There you go. Succinct. Nice. That's how you do it, people.
That's how you do it.
Okay, strap in, folks. Rude Seegers has got a fucking lot to say, and this is it. He says, one of the first Queen songs I heard growing up with Greatest Hits 2. It made me a Queen fan. Later discovering that they have a truck, yeah, load of much better songs. I see what you did there, Rude. The roll calls helped me learn the names of the band members and their instruments, and I still shout them out when I listen and not skip the song. 8-year-old me did not understand a word of the lyrics, loved the song, and 41-year-old me likes it for nostalgia reasons enough to champion it. It's a good song for kids who step out of kids' tunes into the world of actual music and discover Queen. I was not surprised you both dusted it. You were probably joking because the first 10 minutes you promoted curling to a sport, which it isn't, and you also called it interesting, which it isn't, or you must really like brooms. Hey, nothing wrong with fucking brooms. Let's get this, you know, this anti-broom bias out the door.
Sports go sports!
But hey, we're all free to have opinions, even though they are wrong. So, go fuck yourself. Oh, I should explain. I rebranded Go Fuck Yourself to Good For You and contemplate to start a brand new, more positive-minded religion with Winnipeg as the main capital. Never been there, but you say you hate Winnipeg. It must be a paradise. Hey, I don't say I hate Winnipeg.
That's Sean McGuinness's tagline.
It's not us saying that. That's Sean. And he lives there, so he'd know.
and you're using the song, right?
Uh-huh.
The song, I forget what it is, where they say, I hate Winnipeg. And I would also just like to throw in one other quick rebuttal to Rude's comment. I've never said that curling is a sport. I was just working a curling event where they were calling it a sport, and they put it on the sports network. So draw whatever conclusion you like there, but it's not coming from me. You know what I mean?
I like curling. Anyone else says that it's rubbish can ram it.
Yeah, well, I've heard they made curling an Olympic sport, which leaves the possibility open that my father could win a fucking Olympic medal. Sarah Chapman, loved this ep, even though you both voted wrong.
And I don't remember. We're talking about Hasselhoff.
Hasselhoff. But what do we say?
We were talking about David Hasselhoff and him being big in Germany and whatnot, and which we got disabused of over on Twitter. Dita was having a go at me about that on a different post, but so she, you know, left a little gif of Mr. Hasselhoff.
Yeah, nice. James Lawrence says, haven't listened to the episode yet, but this can only be a duster. Hope you referenced the 12-inch version of this was a bonus track on the original CD version of The Miracle. Let's be honest, though. We've all been waiting for that maniacal wheel to dish this up. Russell Watkins, I used to like this a lot more, but it hasn't aged particularly well. The video is still fun, but the song is a duster.
I just think the video is a bit cringy as well. I mean, I know it's supposed to be silly and lighthearted, but it's just a bit naff. Nah, anyway.
Well, no, I think you know what? And I didn't really put this together just because I wasn't sort of thinking in terms of this, but it's been pointed out, and I think quite correctly, is that it's kind of a kid's thing.
Yeah.
Like I could see being a young kid and seeing that video and going, and the song too, and going,
absolutely.
Yeah, ooh, that's fucking cool. But as everybody else has said, you know, as a 40, however old you are, person, it's like, nah, it's just, there's not enough substance.
Why then does Yellow Submarine hold up? Because I still love Yellow Submarine.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing, right?
I know. Yeah. The rules are flexible, changeable. Yeah. I don't know.
And we don't make them, we just follow them, right?
That's right.
Michael J. Smith says, I think it's silly and kind of fun, but nowhere near a champion. I don't skip it, but yeah, can't be putting it in the champion draw. Suzanne Morris says, Freddie Mercury, John Deacon, Brian May, and Roger Taylor. These are the best bits. I do listen to it, but it's not hugely dusty. Just a little. But she's still dusting it. Brian Delaney says, I don't think it's as bad as you both seem to. While it's certainly not a Stone Cold champion, it's not quite at Delilah level. I think it's a fun, upbeat song, albeit with some creepy lyrics. For the purposes of voting, it's dust, but I do enjoy it for what it is. And you know what? That's a very rational, reasonable, sensible argument post, and I have no objection to any of it.
And it has no place here.
It has no place on this fucking podcast or on the internet. You're doing social media wrong.
Lynn DeAnda says, champion, can't separate the song from the video with life-size Queen in the game. And Nick Crofts adds, 18-year-old me didn't mind this when it came out in 1989, but 52-year-old mature me, not so much anymore these days. I think I fought for the song too in 1989, Kev. Do you guys find some days you don't mind a song and other days you can't stand it? 12-inch mix is pure awful too. And yeah, I mean, man, hey, there, you know, some days you just don't feel like listening to this or listening to that. I definitely have those days. They're usually Tuesdays around 10 o'clock. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
When you've told me in the past too that you don't really necessarily ever want to listen to like Superstition again or certain songs just because you've played them a fucking million times, right? And you're just like, yeah, I'm kind of done with that. Now.
My Lord. Yes. Yes. There's so many songs that I'm tired of. Doesn't make them not great songs.
Well, there's a reason why you picked them to play, right?
Exactly.
Mary Cam says, I still love this. It's so much fun. Champion for me. Yeah, fair enough, Mary. And Gavin Laurie, dag nabbit, I left my comment in the wrong place again this week. Please don't miss me out again this week. Oh, shit in fuck. I'm going to have to go look, aren't I? Gavin, fuck, man. The fuck? So here's what Gavin said. A couple of crazy cats took me to a warehouse with this new dance music playing. They gave me a tablet and suddenly the music got me moving and grooving. Was awake all night penning a new tune. It's my take on what they kept calling acid house. The band are going to love it, and it'll drag us into this new dance scene for sure. And it'll fuck the dance kids up on the dance floor, especially the bit that goes out of time, because I'm a bit of a cunt sometimes. Looking forward to all the old-school DJs remixing the fuck out of it. I'm going to get chicks and super rich from this. Roger Taylor Diaries, Chapter 88, Dystopia, Black Pie. So there we go. More, we've got another entry from this the elusive Roger Taylor Diaries, which I love.
Brilliant.
Tweet of the week. Tweet of the week. Tweet of the week.
Deborah Standinger. I agree that the lyrics are a bit strange, but I love Brian's guitar solo, so this is a champion for me. And Patrick McCarthy says, I mean, I know it's not a great track, but I know I enjoy it. The video pops up on the YouTube sidebar and the kids always dig it. I like the groove, the middle eight, just all good vibes for me. Sorry, go fuck yourselves. I like how he apologizes and then he tells us to go fuck ourselves. Very classy, Patrick.
Serena Shumaka says, I like this. I like the individual mentions of the four band members. John Deacon's bass part is noticeably louder after his name mentioned. So guys, I don't agree with you. There are definitely other shit trifles out there that haven't come up yet. Donuts are spinning. So there you go. It spins Serena's donut.
Nice.
Well, there we go. That's all the socials for this week, Randy. You know, good jibber jabber again from our wonderful listeners, as always. And even some people who don't listen, or they don't listen before they've commented. So, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, indeedy.
Fucking hell. Okay, well, Randy, let's get to the business at hand. Let's talk about a Queen song, which is the title of this episode. So people who've loaded this episode up already know what we're going to spin here, which is always a bit anticlimactic, and I don't really know any other way of doing that. But there are some people who've managed to sort of, I think what they do maybe is they say, hey, Siri, play next, you know, whatever. Oh, fucking Siri's just turned on. Fuck off, Siri. You know, they just tell the device to play the next episode in the thing, and you can do it that way, I suppose, and you wouldn't know. But so the question I'm going to ask you is, what do you want to listen to, mate? What do you want to listen to tonight?
Dude, you know what? Modern times rock and roll.
Ooh.
That's what Uncle Randy wants to hear. And he wants to hear it tonight, this night, March 5th.
Well, you know what? We've not had a ton. Well, we've had four off Queen One, I guess, of the nine. So I'm talking up my ass. We have had just about half of them. But it's been a few weeks since we last did The Baby Jesus, which is, of course, how you have to say it. So yeah, that's okay. Well, you're doing that one. Well,
Hang on a second, though. I want to hear that again. Mm. How do you say that?
Well, you don't say the baby Jesus. You say the baby Jesus.
Oh,
that's
okay.
How you got to say it. Yeah.
Okay. And then is that like do all folks from England say that? Or?
I think it's everyone in the whole world except
me.
People in Saskatoon.
Okay. Yeah. And give me just one more time, just so I got it right. Let me hear it again.
So, you know, it's Noel, and you know, you see the nativity scene, and you see the three wise men, and you see the camels and the T-Rex, and you also see the baby Jesus.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. Okay. Good. Good. Thank you. No, I really do appreciate, like, you know, if my pronunciation's off, I want to know. So thank you.
If you're not laughing, and fucking no one is, you're learning. So, well, I'm going back to the 70s as well, because I've had enough of the 80s, Randy. I don't want to go in the 80s. I think we need a good, like, three or four song run of 70s Queen to cleanse our palates. So I'm going to go to jazz, because we've done four songs from jazz, but there are 13 songs on that record, and we've been split. We both championed two, and we both dusted two. So I want to go back, and I want to do a whimsical little Brian May number called Dreamer's Ball.
Mm.
So that's, we've got one vote for Modern Times Rock and Roll, one vote for Dreamer's Ball. Okay, so over in our Discord server, you know, if you join our Discord server, you can manifest your tune as well. If you call your shot, maybe we'll have some sort of little prize that you get. So Aaron Mullen said, Aaron Mullen and Chrissy both want She Makes Me. Barry John Williams, Don't Lose Your Head. Nikki wants to hear Seven Seas of Rye. Paz is looking for It's a Hard Life. Ian Winnick wants us to stay with The Miracle and go, Was It All Worth It? Keith Austin's going all the way back to Queen 2 with March of the Black Queen. Masfa 17, I'm not too sure that is. My Fairy King. Steve wants You Don't Fool Me. Matt Greenham wants Dead on Time. And Ruddy Rutherford wants Liar.
Hmm.
So those are manifest. We've not had, you know, two people want She Makes Me, and the rest of us are a little bit all over the map. So let's see what this confounded wheel spins up for us tonight.
Indeed.
Come on, come on, come on. We'll get it. Oh, is someone going to get their manifestation? They are. Ho, ho, ho. It's a big one. Keith Austin called his shot. Randy, what are we listening to tonight?
The March of the Black Queen from Queen 2.
Now, I'm not too sure if this shows my hand too much, but I did actually put this on the jukebox at the pool hall last night when me and my daughter went to play pool.
Hmm.
But maybe because, I just like irritating people who play pool, you know?
Yeah, because you dislike it so much.
All right, we got something to do, Randy. Come on, just I know that you like doing it. Tell the folks what we're going to go and do now.
Do your fucking research.
Why are you whispering? Do you think it's sexy? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yeah,
is it sexy, Randy?
I'm trying to woo you, Kevin.
I'm trying to woo me.
You son of a bitch.
I am moist. Hey,
fucking do your research, you fucking long back bastard. Of the Black Queen, Kevin,
mm-hmm.
written by Frederick Mercury. That's his real name.
Frederick isn't.
Yeah, it's Frederick Mercury. I'm not even sure. He might have been from Mars, but you know, the way singers are. Anyhow, 6 minutes, 34 seconds. Seems pretty long. We have all our usual folks here with also Roy Thomas Baker playing some castanets, who, of course, has produced along with them in the past. And also Robin Cable, who I'm not sure I've seen before producing. Maybe he did this album. And our good friend Brian May also played some tubular bells, which is pretty interesting. And I'm kind of wondering if Robin Cable, if it's because he wrapped lots of cables in the studios.
But
I think it is. And I think your booing is just inappropriate, good sir. And so I'm just reading on Queen All the Songs here, which I really like this about Freddie. As he says, I want people to work out their own interpretation of me and my image. And I don't want to build a frame around myself and say, this is what I am and this is who I am. So I like that. So he's basically just saying, mm-hmm. you know, when he goes out, he's performing. He's not this, you know, this isn't Frederick at home drinking tea. This is Freddie Mercury, right? I mean, and you know, I'm making a joke of that, but I think if you've performed enough, you realize there's a separation between the sort of the two kind of things. And I think that's really what he's alluding to. And I just like that because he's so famous, of course, and he even was, even at this point, definitely on the rise. He wants people to decide, and he doesn't want to spell it out. Just the same way he doesn't explain his lyrics. It's like, these are the lyrics, you know, they affect mm-hmm. you. How you're asking me? Well, you know, those are the words. Read them. So, I appreciate that. So,
it's the Dylan approach, right? That's what Dylan always said. You know, it's not. You know, once I've written them down and I've recorded it, it's nothing to do with me anymore.
You know,
the way you listen to them, the way you interpret them, that's on you. That's not on me. I don't ask me to explain my songs to you because, you know.
Yeah, that's not my job.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know, it's funny because I've never read that before. Because this song is not, to me, it's not self-referential. It's not biographical. It's a flight of fancy. I mean, as soon as you get into it, I think you'll say, oh, yeah, no, there's no sort of allusion to Freddie as a man, I don't think, in here, really. I mean, there could be subconsciously or, you know, subliminally, but I've never taken it that way, so.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, though, that I'm 99.8% confident that you've never heard this song before.
Well, I appreciate your confidence. Well, I guess I'll let you know as soon as I hear it.
Well, should we get to that right now and let you listen to it?
I think so.
So, quite a halftimey, downbeat, sort of, I don't know, ethereal is quite the right word, but menacing, I would say, is kind of the opening tone to this song a little bit. Wouldn't you agree, sir?
Yes, indeed. Menacing.
And we'd read, too, that, you know, because this was quite insane to me that sometimes when you think about some of these songs back then that were recorded on 16-track, that they'd, again, you know, the old story about Bohemian Rhapsody is true of this song too, where, and you obviously, you don't really hear that now, but it wore the tape out. It literally wore the oxide off the tape, so it was transparent, Roger said. And, you know, this remix tends to clean a lot of it up, so you don't get some of the production problems with it that we were reading about. But it's interesting that, you know, that sort of saturation point in the studio when you've got all these ideas. You think about some of these songs that these guys wrote, like if Freddie had the digital technology or 64 tracks or 128 tracks, fuck, how much more would he have done? You know what I mean? Like how bigger and how grander could he have thought, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of constrained by the technology, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, it's probably not the worst thing. I mean,
no.
You start talking about, you know, even 32 tracks. I mean, yeah, you start to lose things the more shit that you layer, obviously.
For sure.
You listen to some of your absolute favorite classic records from the 60s, 70s, and lots of times there's like four instruments playing. And that's it. And that's all. You know. So yeah. But you know, if you'd had more tracks, I'm sure you would have
filled them. Well, I think too, though, you just wouldn't have had to bounce, right? You'd have just got better. You'd have been able to get better separation on the tracks, and it not necessarily would have layered it more, but just would have had a bit more distinction, a bit more flexibility with it.
Yeah, I don't know that he would have bounced tracks on a 16 track. Maybe. Kind of doubt it.
Okay.
I kind of doubt that on a 16 track that they would bounce like submixes down. Maybe. I shouldn't say never, but
yeah. Well, let's listen to the song and see if you change your mind at the end of it.
Sure. Yeah.
To heaven and then coming back alive.
Let me tell you all about it.
So now
give me a little time to choose.
What a baby singing in a little pretty delight.
Little animal kiss.
So already you've got, you know, 3-4 different ideas here all being sort of plowed into this one. It blows my mind sometimes when I listen to these early records that one person can have all that in their brain and kind of, because Freddie basically sort of, you know, would write little sections, but had it all mapped out how it worked and how it intertwined and how it all flowed. It just, I can never wrap my head around, you know, like the proggy guys. Like, how the fuck do you get to this point where you're going beyond into this kind of territory? I just don't understand it.
Yeah. It's hard to say. He obviously put some pretty serious thought into all this. So, yeah.
Well, I guess John said that
makes you wonder if he took home the board tapes and
right
and worked on some of these backing parts and stuff. I mean, I have no idea. Probably did.
Yeah, I don't know about that either. And people out there, if you know sort of that process, whether Freddie would have been taking parts home and listening to them and then reassembling. But I think a lot of these early songs, he did come into the studio with them more or less, you know, sort of sketched out, knowing this is this part, this is that part, this is how these two are going to go together. And we'd read that, you know, obviously this was not done in one take. They weren't sort of playing these through all the way from start to finish, and they were sort of assembling them later. Yeah. But still, just have that vision of this, you know, 6.5 minute song of, with all these different complex parts of how they go together and make them not annoying and jarring, is, like I said, it's just wizardry to me.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what? I mean, not to take away from Freddie either, but it might not have all been mapped out until he started working on it. And
true, true.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So who knows? Either way. 1:30 in, sounding pretty good so far. I don't know.
For the Black Queen, marching single file. Take this, take that, bring them down to size. Put them in the cellar with the nanny bar. Oh, little nigga sugar, then a rubber double baby. Yeah.
A lot of words in there, hey. That's the other thing, that shotgun staccato delivery. It's like, how the hell do you keep track of what you're singing?
Yeah, it's and I mean, it's very vocal forward.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to listen to the drums and stuff, and it's, you know, it's definitely an overpowering element, you know. It's
right.
Very cool. Very cool.
Never get a better fool. You can be my sugar baby, you can be my honey
You can hear those high vocals again here from Rog. Like, I love that, you know, obviously more prominent on Bohemian Rhapsody because, you know, the mix is maybe a little better or whatever. But you can just, he's fucking screaming his bollocks off right at the top of his range.
That was a pretty great little crescendo there. I thought that was fucking pretty cool.
Yeah. And, you know, we've not talked all about, you know, we'll listen to the locals. And again, you're listening to this for the first time. We're definitely going to have to get a really good listen when we do this the second time. But listen to what Deke is playing on this. Again, playing his sack off. Rog is all over the kit. There's some really interesting sort of polyrhythmic elements to this song. It's a little bit bewildering, a little bit overwhelming at first. Like, first time listening, it's like, fucking hell, where's this song going next? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, do tell.
From behind me reminds me that you wait, you are an angel. Remember to deliver with the speed of light.
A little bit of love.
Just very quickly pausing because I'm trying to put in a few pause breaks so we don't get hit with, you know, copyright violations and all that kind of stuff, Randy, because, you know, we don't want that.
Everything you do bears a will and a why and a wherefore. A little bit of love and joy. In each and every soul lies a man very sweet and his
you bring a little love.
love that very sort of, again, theatrical, vaudevillian, you know, with the piano. It sounds like an upright rather than a grand. I'm pretty sure it is a grand, but it's got that sort of tone to it where it sounds like you can just imagine this dusty old fucking decrepit Victorian theatre with the piano player sitting off to the right-hand side. You know, it's got that. That's the imagery I always get when I listen to that section.
Now, I really liked how the piano, I think it was on the right-hand side, you did that little trill. And then you can hear Brian, he plays it on the left the next time. And you can hear that, like, Brian has used that same notion an awful lot in his playing. It makes you wonder when exactly that happened. Maybe that was some moment that happened here. Either way, I like it.
I had to play that through. Fucking copyright strike be damned. I'm not cutting that in the middle. Again, I mean, I am showing my hand a little bit here, but that when that comes back in with that big power chord and that line, I reign with my left hand, I rule with my right. I'm Lord of all darkness. I'm Queen of the night. One of my favorite moments in all music, any artist, any song. It's just, it gets the hairs on the back of my neck up every single time.
Donut spun.
Donut still spinning, sir. Violently, vigorously.
The sprinkles are falling off.
The sprinkles are scattered to the four corners of the room. But it's kind of cool because I don't know whether you necessarily expect that coming out of that quiet piano section. You don't really necessarily, there may be the gradual build, but it goes straight back into this rocky rolly section.
Right. Lots of future Queen there, hey?
Yeah.
Lots of elements of future Queen. And I know you stopped it because you want to say something, but sometimes I got fucking something to say.
Absolutely.
And I really, really like that the lyric where she dots her eyes.
She never dots her eyes, yeah.
Yeah, like that's a fucking criticism. I love that. That's brilliant.
Walking through the style.
I also find that very annoying too. You've got to dot your eyes for fuck's sake.
Yeah, because otherwise they're just little owls. Very confusing. The Black Queen tattoos all her pies. She boils and she bakes and she never dots her eyes. I mean, again, it's not. So it's sort of that Lennon-esque or, you know,
sure.
Lear. It's just nonsense, but it's so evocative and so fucking cool.
Sure. I'm with you.
So we've dropped off again now. So, you know, we're getting back to piano now. So we'll see what you think of this last section.
Yeah, do tell.
Forever.
Oh, that's funny. With the so this is the official lyric video, and they faded it slightly there. It doesn't fade on the album because this leads into it leads directly into the next song. Because this whole side black, it all sort of just segues and it's all stitched together. And so this leads directly into "Funny How Love Is," a song called "Funny How Love Is." So there nice. We go. We've 6:38, Randy. We've given you a blast through, but we've got to let you sit and listen to this one in its entirety because it is a piece that needs to be enjoyed.
Yes, please.
So we've just listened to that through again. What I want to do real quick is just, I want to play you.
Go on.
Just the transition from March the Black Queen into Funny How Love Is, just so you can hear it. Just so again, so you got some context to that ending, because it doesn't really work the way that it's faded out on this lyric video. And I really don't know why they did that. It's weird. So I'll just put this on for you for a second.
Great.
So that's the transition point, and then it goes into the next song.
Oh,
so,
okay. Yeah. Cool, yeah.
So side black is side two of Queen 2, and it's this whole... It's not a suite, but it sort of is at the same time, where the songs aren't connected, you know, thematically, but they flow, and it's a whole thing. Yeah, there we go.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing. Okay, well, I went first last week. Okay. And I'm going to tell you now.
Okay.
That I'm a wee bit nervous about this one for a specific reason. And that is that the recording of this one has reminded me of another song that was quite long, had lots of different sections in it, was quite grandiose, that I love, and you ended up downvoting. So I'm just a wee bit. I'm just a wee bit nervous. I think I'm on safe ground, but we'll see. So for you, Randy, March of the Black Queen, all 6.5 minutes of it, is it one of the champions or does it bite the dust?
Well, Kev, it's pretty fucking long. And I've thought about it, but I guess I got to go this way.
We are the champions, my friend.
Now, I kind of feel like I probably don't even really have to ask, but I mean, I think just because we have signed the contracts and we are obligated, if we don't do this, we actually will lose our podcasting license.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Yeah, we don't want to lose that. It's, if people don't know about that, just, you know, just look into it. Just type that in to Google. So, Kev, is this a champion or is this one bite the dust?
Champions, my friend.
This to me is, it's sort of the definition of Queen to me. Like, as growing up listening to this band, this song, you know, has been one of my favorite songs by any band ever for as long as I can really remember having such a thing. Yeah, it's overblown. Yeah, it's all over the place. Yeah, it's, you know, all the criticisms you could throw at sort of the bloat of, you know, self-indulgent, proggy kind of rock and roll. I totally understand it, and I fucking love every single part of that. That's why I love it. Because I like the length of it. I like the scope of it and the aspiration of it, the ambition of it. I love everything about it. And like I said, the fact that this all came from one fella's brain and that he was able to sort of get all these different ideas down on tape, get them all into this cohesive whole that does transition well and all the parts do fit together. I just think it's an absolute triumph. I think it's more of a triumph in some ways than Bo Rap. I think it presages, obviously, like it leads into it. There's a lot of things they're doing here that they revisit on Bohemian Rhapsody. I there's no part of this song that I don't fucking love, Randy. And there's a few sort of specifics that we'll get into, but general thoughts from your end.
Well, first of all, you had said Cohesive Whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually the name of my band in high school. And
Cohesive Whole, damn near Wrexham. No, that's a different joke, isn't it?
You have a triple entendre. Yeah, okay, so I did not grow up with a song. I didn't.
Yeah,
this is the first time. Well, the second time I've heard it now, once with Kevin stopping it every 30 seconds, and then once, you know, playing it all the way through. And so to me, it sounds like a whole bunch of ideas all just crammed together, which I don't think is too far from the truth from what I read. And do I like every little section? Well, I like some sections more than others. You know, was there maybe like one better song if Freddie would have just maybe taken some time and flushed out one of those ideas in there? Well, maybe, I don't know. But in its whole, as it stands, I like it. And I don't mind the meandering bits. I mean, you know, there's not too many sections that are super like memorable and singable afterwards. You know what I mean? Which of course Queen got into after, you know, like we will rock you and anthems and, you know, like
go on
far, far more singable melodies. Just because it does meander so much and is always kind of changing. There's, you're not getting that nice repeated chorus.
Okay.
There's some really cool little tasty little bits, with on all of the instruments, drums, bass, guitar, all of them. Everybody seems to be in fine form. And yeah, I think it's a solid tune.
And what I like is that, you know, you haven't sort of, you know, picked up on, I mean, you know, I made allusion to the Prophet song, I should say, where you didn't really like a lot of the meander in this one. And I think that this one, because it moves along at a pretty good clip, and that none of the sections overstay the welcome either, right? They're not doing the same thing too much.
They don't linger too long in each section, yeah. No.
But like I said, I like that sort of restlessness of it. And there's different styles in it. There's rock and there's vaudeville and there's sort of, you know, sort of ballady type stuff. And there's the different sections. They seem so disparate that you shouldn't be able to fit them all together, but they just do for me.
I think if there's one thing that does sew it together is the lyrics.
Right.
Which is so nice, because throughout all the sections, really they're telling the story, right?
Yeah.
And then of course, which I made mention in the episode, is the what's the dot is dots or eyes line?
Never dots or eyes. Yeah.
Yeah. Read me the lyric before it, so I don't have them up right here in front of me.
I say, so walking true to style, she's vulgar, abuse and vile. The Black Queen tattoos all her pies. She boils and she bakes, and she never dots her eyes.
Oh, I love that. That's a great lyric. To me, I think that's,
yeah,
it's because it's so cheeky, right? And I love that. Well, first of all, I like that in lyrics. And I think Freddie probably does that the best of the group, I would say, probably.
Yeah.
You know, Roger's like hammer, nail, you know, here we go, bang. Brian can get kind of, I don't know, whatever fucking Brian does. But yeah, cheeky, that's, man, he's got it. That's great. I love it.
Well, and this is Terry too. I mean, you look at, you know, water baby singing in a lily pool delight, blue powder monkeys praying in the dead of night. What does that mean?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just that imagery that you need in something this big, right?
But it paints a picture though, right?
100%. It's the same as Fairy Fell Masterstroke, or yeah.
Doesn't have to exactly translate into exact English, but if it paints some picture in your head, then that's doing its job. So
yeah. And I just, again, there's so many, the way he sings some of the lines, black on every fingernail and toe. We've only begun. Like, again, it's just, it's been very, very rhythmic too with the lyric writing, right? Because, you know, we've only begun is a line, but with the melody and the way he wants it to go, we've only begun to repeat it. Then you get that sort of, that punctuation in that section of the song. So again, it's sort of like you said, I mean, he's come in with this idea, and I'm sure that it did grow in the studio. And John said that they practiced this song a fucking ton, because obviously you got to be really tight to play stuff like this. So I think a lot of that would have come out. Oh, what if I do that second line there and that'll sound cooler. But again, I mean, that
he could have just needed another set of syllables there. And
yeah.
And it's like, hey man, repeat, right?
Yeah. But again, man, that line, I reign with my left hand, I rule with my right. There's something about that that is just sort of, it's just a massive epic idea. It's like Tolkien. It's like, you know, any Dune. It's like any of these big grand bits of science fiction that it just puts you, you know, this Black Queen is all powerful, maniacal, you know, there's no undefeatable. It's like that, you know, the immovable object. I think, I don't know, man, everything about this song just, my God, my feeling is all of it, is all of it, Randy. It's all of it is.
Really? Hey, so that one feeling that is so sensitive that you've got is now like receiving the energy of the song.
It's flaming. It's burning at a million degrees, like the fucking center of the sun.
Kev's nerve is flaming, ladies and gentlemen. So I would say, if there was a euphemism for that, that possibly his donut has been fucking spun or is currently spinning. I'm not sure. And you know what? I can see him on camera, and it's messy. I gotta say, it's messy. Not a sight that anybody should see.
Yeah, fucking whatever. Some great guitar in this too, Hale. I mean, there's lots of guitar in this, but I think one thing that always, again, apart from, you know, Freddie's vocal dexterity and the lyrical sort of just overwhelmingness of the vocal, is the fact that every single lick that Brian plays is just so good. It's so tasty. It's so well constructed and placed and, you know, and produced. And every part of this song is perfect to me. It's a perfect song. Even at 6 minutes, 30 odd, and it's this big grand thing, it's a perfect song. It's not a pop song. And like you said, I can hum this in my sleep because I know the song inside out. So there are hummable, singable moments to me. But
well, of course.
Yeah, but it's not verse, chorus. I mean, the structures, you just forget it because it's just all over the place, right? It's more like a classical piece.
Yeah. No, it's definitely an album track.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you say, it wasn't released as a single. And I mean, and just because I'm saying it doesn't have any singable moments, I mean, moments that come to you on whatever I've got, two listens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
I mean, so take this for what it's worth, but I can sing a little bit of the chorus of Invisible Man, and I think that's a fucking shit song. So listen, so I kind of felt like I was taken on a journey, and, you know, they picked me up at the start, and they fucking dropped me off. They pushed me out the back of the truck as they were flying past London. And I just landed, you know, I did a safety roll, and I stood up and I dusted myself off. And that's kind of how I feel. I feel like it's, you know, I've been on a journey, and those kinds of songs are cool if they can pull it off.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know, like, just if I'm being completely blunt, like, is it the favorite thing? Is it the best thing I've ever heard? Or do I think there are better prog songs? Yeah, probably.
Right.
Like I said, I don't have that nostalgia factor, which I feel bad because I know lots of people do and will. And I've got my nostalgia factor on other songs.
Yeah.
But I'll stand by my vote, and I still think it's a good tune, and it's one that I probably would listen to again. I think I would feel like it warrants listening to, again on my own. And I'll be honest with everybody, I don't go back and listen to most of the stuff that we've done.
Yeah.
I don't mean to pick on the Invisible Man, but you know, I still need to hear that again. You know what I mean? But I feel like this has more, a bit more to offer, right?
Yeah.
Like Bo Rap does, or like, what was the killer tune we had 2 weeks ago? Best Friend.
Yeah. You're my best friend. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can just listen to that and you can just pick up little nuances all the time. And I feel like, with this song, there's a bunch that on my two listens that, you know, I could pick up on and enjoy. And I'm sure, like I said, as well as you know it and the way it rings to you, you know, if I had your listens in, numbers of listens, I'm sure I would feel the same way. So,
well, I think the other part is, and people are going to point this out probably in the comments, so I'll address it head on. You know, you're deliberately not going listening to Queen albums ahead of us recording, so these really are first time listens. So, but aside Black of Queen 2, when you listen to the whole side, it becomes a different thing again, right? So March of the Black Queen is this, it's the big moment on the side. I mean, it opens up with Ogre Battle, but this is the sort of the coup de grace on this side of the album. And then we get it transitioning to Funny I Love Is. We finish with Seven Seas of Rye. So its place within the album is really, really important too. So I think that once we have gone through and listened to all the songs on Queen 2, I would love to do an episode where maybe we'll do it in person. We'll sit down and we'll listen to Side Black, and then we can sort of talk about that, and you can see what you think about it. Because, you know, like Rush 2112, right? Again, not an easy sit down. Oh, I'll just have that on in the background. You're going to sit and sort of listen to that because it sort of deserves a bit of attention. I would argue the same thing about Side Black of Queen 2.
Yeah, I was just going to actually, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was just going to say, yeah, if you just plucked a song off 2112 somewhere and just said, here, Randy, listen to this. Yeah. I mean, I don't know how I would take it, but, you know, that album as a whole, and of course, there again, if you want to talk about nostalgia, it's been so long since I've heard it, but you know, I was listening to that when I was 15 years old. So maybe there would be some of that in there for me. But that's a totally great point, especially on an album that runs together, like is intentionally made to run together, you know. And in, you know, okay, here's a little the old man in me. That's something that's lost on this and actually previous generations.
Yeah,
that just the notion that you could have, you know, a side of an album which is what is it, 22 minutes or is it 11 a side? I forget now.
22. Yeah.
Yeah, 22. That you could have like 22 minutes of, you know, four songs all, you know, all blending, all merging, all essentially sort of being one.
Yeah, people just don't. Well, people do write albums. I shouldn't say that. People do write albums. It's mainly heavy metal people and sort of that area. I suppose, like, I'm sure some funk people do larger funk people. They sound like an old fucking grandpa. Funk bands or R&B bands might do more adventurous sort of concept albums. But they're not as common these days, where back in the 70s, fucking tripping over the goddamn things, right?
Well, I mean, unless I don't know something about Queen, at this point, they were still trying to be like big pop stars, right? Like they wanted to be like a successful pop rock band, right? No?
I wouldn't say they were looking to be pop rock. No, I think they were... I think that switch was probably closer to... Day at the Races, maybe. So album 5.
But so you don't think they were fucking concerned about selling fucking albums and,
well, yeah, but
and being, you know, and having a hit on the radio, you know, maybe not one off the Side Black or whatever.
But that's exactly the point, though. That's exactly the point we're making, is you could write albums back then. And Seven Seas of Rye is the single off this album. I mean, it, you know, course, that was a pretty big hit for them. It sort of, you know, was the one that broke them a little bit. Killer Queen off the next albums, the really, really big one. But I don't think they were as concerned about that, because Zeppelin weren't releasing singles, right? I mean, they steadfastly refused to release singles from some albums. They didn't want to say a release, and I think that went behind their back. So I think they come from that generation where let's focus on creating this fantastic set of songs. If there is a single on there, all the better, but it's not going to be necessarily the focus we're going with. Now, again, it definitely did change later on, but I don't know that that was the focus on this album.
I just would struggle to believe that they didn't want this to be in everybody's ears, played on every radio station everywhere, or a million copies sold.
Oh yeah, and absolutely. But radio stations used to play album tracks too. We got to remember that too, right?
And that's what I'm saying, is that the album used to be something that existed. Yeah. And really now it's just not. I mean, I know people are still releasing albums, but it's just not important like it used to be. And you really, if you think about it, it was really only important for not that long.
Yeah, a brief
singles
period,
have always been the things.
I'm kind of curious. I don't know this, and again, I'll throw this out to our listeners if they do know. Seven Seas of Rye obviously got played a ton on the radio. I don't know if anything else on this album. I'm struggling to think about what else you sort of could play on its own. On the radio. Ogre Battle, maybe on some stations. Fairy Fellas could be. You know what? We'll put that out to listeners. If people remember, when people do have good memories for this sort of stuff, let us know which songs you heard on the radio from Queen 2. Okay, we've both championed this. I'm delighted that you like it. I'm more delighted even that you know, you're probably going to give it another listen. Because I do think you'll find lots of little nuggets of cool shit in here. And we haven't really talked, you know, we didn't dig into what the drums are doing, what the guitar's doing, what the bass is doing, all that kind of stuff in too much depth, because it's really difficult to do that on a song like this without having some time with it to actually sit down and properly make notes, because there's so fucking much going on. So I think the broad strokes we've covered it with and some of the things we talked about is enough. But we've got to try and guess how the Twitter poll's going to go. Now, I'm told you, you know, this is a big song for hardcore Queen fans. I'm pretty sure this is coming back positive, but it is your turn to guess first.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to throw it over to you and ask you, what do you think the poll's going to come back?
Yeah, and for me, this is always a crapshoot. I have absolutely no idea. My finger and the pulse of the Queen fandom, not in sync. But I will say this. I will say that 88% in favor.
88-12. That's a fucking good guess, my friend. You've put me in a position here.
I know. I think the term dirty pool might work here.
Well, I'm gonna guess slightly aspirationally, I think. But I do think this is one of those songs for me that I don't see the point of being a Queen fan, or certainly a Queen fan who likes the whole catalog and loves the 70s stuff. I don't get why you would bother being a Queen fan if you don't love this. I just don't understand what the fuck you're... Why do you like Queen if you don't like this song? There's no fucking point. If you love Bohemian Rhapsody, but you don't like this, if you love, like, there's just, you know, you got a point. What was you're gonna make a point there?
Well, there would be lots of people who like Bohemian Rhapsody, You're My Best Friend, all of those big hits, and didn't know the song existed.
That's true enough.
But they would still like the band, and it would say they like the band. So,
you're
talking a little more involved fan. I get it.
So I'm going to go, I am going to go above. I'm going to go 94-6, because I think there will be some fucking contrarians who will nitpick some goddamn thing or other that's utterly ridiculous. No, it's not ridiculous, is it? Music's subjective. We love you all. Please keep listening. there'll be a few people, but I think 94-6. That was a bit groveling, that, wasn't it?
That was, yeah. You know, when we're inviting Joe Burnham in his pandering song.
Joe Burnham? Who's Joe Burnham? Is that Bo Burnham's fucking...
Bo Burnham, sorry.
Joe Burnham. He's a busker from Luton.
That's his red-headed stepchild. Which we were corrected the other day. There is a difference between ginger and redheaded.
And I can't remember now, which one is it that stinks of piss? Do you remember?
Yeah.
I'll throw you under the bus on that
it's
one.
It's the ginger.
Remember to deliver with the speed of light. A little bit of love and joy. I like that Freddie wants love and joy. And he also wants it stat, as in now, speed of light and all. And who doesn't really? But what I really like is that he also wants it delivered. And let's be honest, who wants to get up off their arse and get love and joy when you can have it delivered? Maybe there's a 30-minute guarantee. Free love with a side of joy if it's not delivered within 30 minutes. If I were to title this episode, I'd call it Bo Rap Before Bo Rap, or possibly Them Dudes Can Play. We genuinely appreciate your support and engagement, so you can find us on Facebook and Blue Sky at Seaside Pod Review, and on Twitter at Queen Seaside. Also, we're on Discord, and we have some extras on there which you might be interested in. We'll be back with you next week to chat about Queen.
Brand new angle, highly commendable. Seaside Pod Review.
Woo-hoo.
Seaside Pod Review.
Give us a kiss, Kevy.
Seaside Pod Review.